2 weeks ago, I spoke with us about elders, about the eldership. And in the course of that study, I made reference back to Exodus chapter 18 to try to help us understand that the concepts that we're studying, although they have particular attributes that are expressed, are not new concepts, but that there has always been a need among God's people for leadership. And throughout the Old Testament, it talks about elders, shepherds. And of course, the expression shepherds is something that they would be very common to them, because they are used to shepherding. And it's been observed through the years that the comparison to us to sheep is a really good comparison, because sheep will just sort of lay down and die. If they get a little bit injured, they just sit there, and they don't have the drive that some animals have that way. And if you're not careful, what happens? You get a sheep that'll go off in some direction, sort of the alpha, if you would, and they follow him right into trouble sometimes. And so they need a shepherd to keep them from going and eating and drinking and doing things they ought not to do, because it's harmful to them. And we see that throughout the Bible. Well, I'm going to be very brief about this morning is my plan, but I want to especially focus on Exodus chapter 18 that Cale just read for us a moment ago. And I've talked about this probably 10 years ago. I'd gone through this text and talked about the matter of leadership. But in lieu of a couple of things that I was absolutely slammed full trying to get out of here, and we got back last night from that full week, and so I thought this would be an appropriate time, something I could do without needing lots of hours to prepare for, and something that would be very helpful in consideration of our discussion in the men's meeting, some thoughts there, and our study 2 weeks ago. And so in this particular text in Exodus chapter 18, we find that Moses has led the children of Israel out of Egyptian bondage. They've come through the Red Sea, and they are out approaching Mount Sinai. You may remember, we're reading here in Exodus chapter 18. In chapter 19 is where the law is going to be given. They're going to be around Mount Sinai, and the law is going to be given, and those following chapters are going to unfold that, besides the Ten Commandments. And you get to chapter 24, it talks there about the book of Moses, which incorporates those other things besides the Ten Commandments that go with it. It sort of, pardon my expression, sort of flushes out some of the Ten Commandments. Well, here's how this works. Here's what this means. And so that is coming. And if you notice in the 19th chapter here, in verse 5, Exodus chapter 19 and verse 5. "Now then, if you will indeed obey my voice, keep my covenant, then you will be my own possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." So that's what God had in store for his nation, his people. They were his people. And of course, we are aware that when Christ came, then all nations had an opportunity to come and be a part of God's nation, his people, the kingdom of Jesus Christ, which we're studying about in our Matthew class. But in this particular chapter, there are a number of attributes, I think, that we can see, and some foundational concepts that will help us as we think about the idea of leadership of God's people. And although this is not a list of the instructions of the New Testament about here's the qualifications for a man to become an elder or a deacon, these are concepts that are perpetual, really, for people who will be involved in leading God's people. I'm going to just go through here. I'm just going to piece to piece pull expressions out of here so I can go forward fairly quick to your benefit. In verse 17 and 18, what has happened is Jethro has come, which is Moses' father-in-law. And you may notice here in this 18th chapter that Moses' father-in-law is also a priest of Midian. I don't know a whole lot about that, except there were other priests. This is before the priesthood of Aaron, the Aaronic priesthood, was put in place here in this book of Exodus, as the law is given. So there were priests, and they were offering sacrifices according to these, we call them patriarchs, these father rulers before the law of Moses. But Jethro, the father-in-law, comes and brings Moses' wife and boys and talks about that in this text. But he watches what happens on the next day after they offer the sacrifice, and he sees that the people are just coming to Moses from early till late. And as they are coming to him, it says here in verse 17, Moses' father-in-law said to him, "The thing that you're doing is not good. You will surely wear out both yourself and these people who are with you, for the task is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone." What we're going to see is Jethro observes what's going on and say, "Hey, this isn't going to work." You ever have anything happen that way? Do we see that in our relationship, even as God's people, say, well, I mean, that's interesting. This isn't going to work. We need to certainly do God's way. And so we look at that and try to figure it out. So Jethro sees that Moses is overloaded. Now, as this is going to unfold, there are going to be other men that are going to work and function as judges. And as they function and deal with smaller matters, when things get too tough, then they will go to Moses. And this is going to benefit, we will see, everybody. But it, when there are many hands to carry the load, the task is much easier. I had a friend I was an elder with back in Casey, and he got that expression from his father. Many hands make a light load. If you have to carry 100 pounds, you know, some of y'all can do that pretty easy. But I tell you, I don't even want to pick up 100 pounds anymore. But if you get 10 people grabbing that, it's not a load on anybody. You get the concept. Well, that's really what Jethro is telling Moses here. This is a load, okay? And it's not good. You're going to burn out, is what we would say. And although Moses is leading a multitude of people, don't know how many people, probably a couple or 3 million, we would guess. We know just from the numbers of that are expressed in the book of Numbers about men who were soldiers and warriors. They got wives and a kid or two. You end up with a lot of people. But all these problems keep coming this way. But as Jethro says to his son-in-law, he said, this isn't good. You see Moses' response to that. He didn't balloon up and say, well, you know, I am leading these people out of here. Who are you? And by the way, sometimes, you know, you think about men and their father-in-laws, and that's not always an easy relationship, but that's not the case here. But Moses can take good advice. There was a man that came to the gospel meeting who I talked to some months ago. I thought, man, you need to be an elder. And this is another congregation that I know well, and he's a good man. He's been asked to do that, but he had been hesitant. Well, since then, he has become an elder. And he came to the gospel meeting, and I was just telling him, I'm appreciative. I think he's a good man. I think he will do a good job. And he says, I don't feel ready for this. And I says, nobody does. And if they do, you probably don't need them as an elder. And if they are full of themselves, you're going to have to eat a lot of humble pie before this is over. That's the nature of the beast. So he's a good man. And I think he's got his heart in the right place, and he's able, and I think he will do well. But as we look at this, we find that such a man have to be of a mind to take advice. And again, since I'm going to try to keep this lesson short, I'm going to keep moving here. I'd like to say many more things. Jethro recommends that you get a bunch of other good men to help you deal with this load, to help carry this load that we were just talking about. And so he proposes that in verse 21, and he says, you shall select out of all the people men, but of good character, which we'll talk about here. But you notice in verse 23, now, I think Cale probably read from the ESV, I'm guessing. The expression the ESV uses here is a different expression than all the other translations that I consulted, include the Numeric Standard. And I'm not against the ESV. I'm just trying to make a point here for purpose. In verse 23, we find that Jethro suggests this, and Moses listens to him. And he's saying here, I believe, if God approves of this, gives us a thumb up on this, this is going to work out really well. Verse 23 says, if you do this thing and God so commands you. And so you see, apparently, the authority of God behind this. They take it to God, and he puts a green light on it. And the ESV went a different way with their translation there. If you do this, then God will go with you, and he'll see you through this and all. But all the other translations that I commonly am around, you know, translates it like this. And so what they are doing is looking at a way to accomplish this that is okay with God. Because Moses has been appointed to lead the people out. And God seems to give a thumbs up on this situation. Now, what are the attitudes and the character of the men that are going to be these leaders? Well, first of all, in verse 19, we see that they're going to need to be God-centered folks. I'll give you counsel, and God be with you. You be the people's representative before God, and you bring the disputes to God. And so this is all centered around, we're going to bring this before God. This is God's will. And so all the way around, this is the kind of men that you need. That's always needs to be the foundation and the basis by which we operate. And it says in verse 21, it describes them this way, men who fear God. It's not just talking about men that are really smart, or they've got the gift to gab, or they just got good people skills, although that's really, really going to be helpful. The foundation is not only are they able, but that they fear God. That they revere to God. And you remember over in Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 7, the beginning of knowledge, or the beginning of wisdom, other pastors say, is the fear of Jehovah. And so these men need to have those characteristics. And in, as we read this all together, we see it is not a place for pride or a competitive spirit. We're in here, you know, Moses and these men aren't going to be having a tug of war with each other, nor men one with the other. They're going to try to accomplish and meet the needs that are there for God's people. And so, you know, that's where pride can come in. You know, we if we're not careful, we all struggle with that as human beings. And so in the reading of these verses, we see that that is not the case. But these men are going to need knowledge. And so what's going to happen? It says in verse 20, then teach them the statutes and the laws and make known to them the way in which they are to walk and the work they are to do. And so they're going to need to learn God's word. And as we go forward here, as I said, in the very next chapter, the law of Moses is given. God has already spoken. He has already put his will, if you would, in the world and among his people and how to walk. But as this law is given, they're going to need to know these statutes. They're going to know when God says this is right so that they can say it's right. And they're going to need to know if God says this is wrong so they can say it's wrong. Long and short of it. Now, as they are going to be judges, and I could bring this up later, but I want to make sure to say this. When we talked about the qualifications of elders last week, one of the things I tried to bring out was there is a lot of judgment that's involved in those qualifications. I think I used an example, is a man given to anger? Well, if a man doesn't ever get angry, you don't want him to do anything. You don't need a milk toast. But the kind of anger that is involved is the kind of anger that is righteous, and it's not short-fused, and it's not over selfish purposes, but unrighteousness and wickedness. And so as we look at it, we have to make some judgment about that. Is Gale given to anger? So we saw that with many qualifications. Now, there are some of the qualifications that are given as yes or no. That he is a husband. Okay? Yes or no, is he? He's not married. I talked about that last week. So they are going to have this knowledge so that they will be able to have the ruler by which to make these evaluation and to make judgments. And they are going to have to make judgments. And we make judgments. And that's what our series of lessons last month was about. And so they're going to need the knowledge to be able to do that. But it also says in verse 21, they are men of truth. So to say, they will buy the truth and they won't sell it. They're not going to sell out. They're not going to be willing to take a bribe. They're not going to be bought out by family. They're not going to let these. They love the truth because they love God. And so these judgments will be made accordingly. And then in verse 20, as we've already read here, to teach them the statutes and the laws and make known to them the way in which they are to walk. So how they live. And then it talks about their work, which we'll bring up here in just a minute. And so do they live this that they're promoting? The way of God, the words of God, these statutes and ordinances, God's laws he's given them, are they hammering that out, so to say, in day-to-day life? And again, I think I mentioned this 2 weeks ago, but we're talking about men, and we have our shortcoming, and every one of us is different. Every person in this congregation is different, and that's okay. But who is the boss? God. Who holds the reins? God. And so we need to remember that. And so these men are not men who are going to be bribed off. As I mentioned a moment ago, they hate dishonest gain. And in verse 20, they're going to have this work to do and judging, and it's going to be work indeed. And in verse 21, okay, they are able men who will fear God. They're going to have to be men that are up to the task. Now, I just gave you an illustration about this elder. He said, I don't feel fully prepared for this. Well, he's not. And these men aren't. But they are able men who will go forward and use these tools, if you would, in the Spirit and out of faith to glorify God, to take care of these matters. And as we read this whole text a while ago, as Cale read that for us, you see, there are going to be some things that are pretty tough and they're hard to sort out. And so they're going to pass on to Moses. They're going to be able to do that in that way in this scenario. And you're going to place them over the people. He talks about here in various groupings. It says, furthermore, you shall select out of the people able men who fear God, men of truth, those who hate dishonest gain, and you shall place them over as leaders of thousands and hundreds and fifties and of tens. So we're talking about a lot of people and a lot of problems. So you're going to place them over so that they can manage this. And so they can make decisions about this. And that's going to carry some authority with it. Now, obviously, what happens if this is corrupted, and the Old Testament warns about this, the law does, and all through the prophets, about taking a bribe. okay, I get to make the decisions here, and if you give me an extra $1,000, I'm going to make this in your direction, called a bribe. Not unknown in the world in which we live. But the character of these men that are chosen here to be these leaders, shepherds of God's people, are to be men that have a higher calling than that. And you let them judge the people. These things, there's going to be things that come up. And, you know, that's the way life is. Again, just pulling the curtains back, we've had a couple business meetings over the last number of years where we had a couple things back during COVID, a little bit of friction, and more recently a little bit of friction. That's okay. But the question is, what do we do with that then? And in both of those situations, I was very pleased on the other side because I watched men behave like godly men, talk to each other, work through, and resolve those things. There will be friction. If that's never happened in your household, well, we're not going there. There's friction. That's a part of life. But how do we deal with it? What do we do with it? And the truth of the matter is, oftentimes, it is really an opportunity to make us better. That's life. But it matters how we respond to it. I had a thing I printed off and left in my office years ago. They said, life is 10% of what happens and 90% of how you respond to it. And that's an old adage. But that's weighty. And so these men are going to have to deal with all kinds of different things, and they're given direction here on how to respond. And in verse 22, we find that there's going to be a load. Let them judge the people at all times, and let it be that every major dispute they will bring to you, but every minor dispute they themselves will judge, so it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. They will bear the burden with you. Sometimes that burden's pretty heavy. I was talking to my son Caleb this last week, and who's been an elder now a number of years, and there were several things that come up. The eldership there had to go through some fires. But they're better men because of it. And the congregation, frankly, is just at a better place because of it. But we have to determine to resolve things as God has described. But it is a load. And so you get to a place where you have elders again someday, which hopefully, you know, that we're looking to that. That's our plan. You support those men. You all have been good at that. When Nick and I were elders, you all were encouraging and supportive. God bless you for that. But you just remember those kinds of things because there's so much that you don't know about what's going on oftentimes when certain situations happen. And you may say, well, I wouldn't have done that. Well, if you knew what I knew, you would have. You know what I'm saying. And so the character of these men guided and using God's word. Now, again, they can take instruction. We said about Moses. He took advice. And it may be, say, well, that's what we needed to do. I can't go into it right now. Or say, well, I never thought about that. Maybe we should have done differently. That's where humility will come in, isn't it? And this is according to God's will. And so you see this picture of the kind of leadership among God's people where God is the boss. He's the king. And his word rules. And it's the basis by which we evaluate. And on the other side of that filters the outcome. And that they were going to need to work together, as we just read here. And sometimes, you know, that's more challenging. But we need to be able to do that. And you have here that these are men that are able men. And they're probably, we'd say, you know, they're leaders. And so they're going to have to be careful. But they're going to need to work together in this process. And in verse 23 then, if you do this thing, and God commands you to do so, God so commands you, then you will be able to endure, and all the people also, what will happen? The end of verse 22. They will go to their place in peace. What is taking place here, this kind of leadership, is a blessing to the flock of God. And again, that is the purpose to the eldership. And I made allusion, I think, to Hebrews chapter 13. Obey your leaders, that it might be a joy, not a heartache for them. And it is a joyous thing in that way. Now, I'm not going to take time to develop this. I actually sent this passage to Cale, was going to have him read it first, but I changed my mind and he graciously picked up and read our text here in Exodus 18. But we were talking about elders last time, that they are shepherds. We talked about those terms. Well, here is one text, and we could look in Jeremiah 23 and other places as well, where Israel had shepherds, but the shepherds were feeding themselves. They didn't care about the flock. They were bad shepherds. And then as you read these texts in the prophets, you find what's going to happen, but he says, God is going to raise up the good shepherd. That's how we would express it. You read over in John chapter 10, the good shepherd came. I am the good shepherd, and I'm going to lay down my life for the flock, for the sheep. And so here, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. because they have the name in the office. They had the responsibility to do God's things, God's ways, just like we're really looking at here in Exodus chapter 18. Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say to those shepherds, this is what the Lord God says. Woe, shepherds of Israel, who have been feeding themselves, should the shepherds not feed the flock? You eat the fat and clothe yourself with their wool. You slaughter the fat sheep without feeding the flock. Those who are sickly, you have not strengthened. The disease, you have not healed. The broken, you have not bound up. The scattered, you have not brought back. Nor have you searched for the lost. But with force and with violence, you have dominated them. They scattered for lack of shepherd. And they became food for every animal of the field and scattered. My flock strayed through all the mountains and on every high hill. My flock was scattered over all the surface of the earth, and there was no one to search or to seek for them. Now you remember Jesus, the Good Shepherd, and you remember in Luke chapter 15, the lost sheep, and many other illusions that way. But for a man to be a shepherd in this scenario and have to face God is not going to be pretty. And others suffer, not just the shepherd. And God is pained, because his sheep were not led. Well, God brought about something much better. Real quick, in the New Testament, in Acts chapter 6 and verse 3, here some men are going to be appointed to the task of taking care of tables. There were widows here that were in need, and the apostles were to be busy in proclaiming God's word and in prayer. And so it says, you choose from among yourselves men that have such characteristics. Select from among you, brethren, seven men of good reputation, full of the Spirit and of wisdom, whom we may put in charge of this task. Again, not talking about elders here, and may or may not be talking about what we would say the office of deacon, probably not. But you again see the character, the kind of trustworthy, God-centered men, full of the Word and the will of God, to take care of this task. Now you remember a little bit later, one of these is going to die. And you remember a little bit later, one of these is going to be off preaching in chapter 8. But on this occasion, they were chosen to do this, and they were servants of God's people to take care of that particular need. In 2 Timothy 2 and verse 2, Paul tells Timothy that you teach faithful men who will be able to teach others also. And the word xanthropos there, that's really men and women. You teach people who will be faithful and able, and they're going to teach other people also. Again, you see the character that's involved behind this. And last week, or 2 weeks ago, we talked about it in 1 Timothy 3 in Titus chapter 1. About the nature of men appointed as elders and deacons. And we see this character. And so it brings us to this question. What path am I headed down as a younger, a little older, or as an older man in regard to God's people? We said last time, you know, there are things and the qualifications for an elder that might keep me from being an elder, like the Apostle Paul we talked about, even though he was a good and a godly man. But we use our capacities to God's glory. There's a man in the congregation when the eldership was put in place here, and he said, I believe that I'm not qualified to be a deacon, but I can serve all those ways anyway, and he has and he does. That's the spirit that needs to be prevailing in every one of us. Leaders must not be self-willed. They must love God and righteousness and truth. I'll close with Psalm chapter 32, verses 1 and 2. How blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. How blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity, and whose spirit there is no deceit. The wonderful power of the mercy and the forgiveness of God. Quoted, by the way, over in the book of Romans chapter 4. This morning, if you have not obeyed the gospel of Christ, it is Jesus who went to the cross and died, God in the flesh, who never sinned, and he went there as a perfect, sinless sacrifice to shed his blood, as was talked about concerning the Lord's Supper, that we might have a way to be reconciled to God. After Jesus had been crucified and buried, on the third day he rose from the dead. For 40 days he demonstrated himself alive with many convincing proofs. Acts chapter 1, the first verses tell us about the 40 days and many convincing proofs. But in that 40-day period, he told his disciples, I want you to go out into the world and make disciples. Mark's account says in Mark 16, 15 and 16, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized will be saved. He that disbelieveth will be condemned. In Matthew's account, all authority has been given to me, to Jesus, by the Father. All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. You go, therefore, and make disciples, people who will follow Jesus. It's really what we're talking about in our Matthew class this morning, wasn't it? And you baptize them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. and you teach them to observe all that I've commanded you, they continue to walk as disciples, seeking to know the will of God and live it and help others to do the same. If you're subject, heaven calls this morning. You can come forward as we stand and sing this song or reach out to somebody afterwards. We'd be happy to help.